This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, University of Alabama Professor Emeritus John Boland discusses his survey of youth in the poorest neighborhoods of Mobile and his thoughts on poverty and hopelessness. Boland will speak at Western Michigan University next week. But first, we're going to discuss what's happening at Western Michigan University's campus and higher education in general with Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Thank you very much for being here.
Gordon, thank you very much. It's nice to be with you and also with colleague Emily from MLive.
That's right. Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Emily Monticelli is here as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And you have the first question for President Dunn.
President Dunn, Colony Farm Orchard has been in the news recently. It sounds like Western wants to use the property to expand the Business Technology and Research Park. What does the university see Colony Farm Orchard as becoming in the future?
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's a very good question. Actually, there's quite a bit of history on this. Many years ago, we indicated that ultimately, given the success of the Business Technology and Research Park, that it would soon come to capacity, which it has, and that because of that, we would need additional space, and access to the Colony Orchard was highly desirable. We made that announcement several years ago with the caveat that we would not do anything with the 330 acres of the Sidon Lake property, which is across the road. So we're true to that. I think the environmental stewardship of the orchard will be consistent with what we see at the Business Technology Research Park. It's won several awards for its watershed management and also just the look, feel, and the natural preserve that's still there.
Does that mean that there would be perhaps a limit on how much of that land you would actually develop? In other words, would you try to keep a fair amount of open space on the Old Colony Farm Orchard if there is an expansion of the Business Technology Research Park?
Well,
there?
First of all, there's not a great deal of space there to begin with. It's a very narrow, thin stretch with some strands of trees, some in very bad shape. Also has a number of tunnels there, and it's not exactly what you would call the easiest property to navigate because of what has happened and occurred there through the years. So that's why it's posted right now. We don't encourage people to walk there. There's some issues related to safety and those kinds of things. But the plans for that are yet to be determined. You know, we're very early in the stages. Obviously, there'll have to be infrastructure put there. And then the question becomes, okay, given that, how much can we carve out parcel-wise and still have an environment consistent with what we see with the BTR park?
My colleague here at WMUK, our news director, Andy Robbins, interviewed a couple of representatives from the Save Old Colony Farm Orchard Group. And I just want to play a little bit here from Doug Cato, who's a member of that group, talking about what they would like to see.
Ideally, we'd like it to be annexed into the Sidon Lake property and become part of that preserve. Failing to do that, we are concerned that this might not be developed responsibly. So any kind of hand that we can have in that makes sure that the property is made as sustainable as possible, developed as sustainably as possible, is important to us.
And what he goes on to say a little bit later in the same interview is that they would like to maintain some natural buffer zones from US 131, keep the ecosystem relatively sustainable, and preserve as much natural green space as possible. What's your reaction to that?
No, first of all, I think you indicated Doug Cato.
Yeah.
And first of all, input on these kinds of things. This is a university. We have lots of voices, and we appreciate that, and lots of citizen interest. His first comment, though, about annexing the property, I think that was his first comment. Look, we have been very, very careful to say that we're going to preserve a Sidon Lake property. That's 330 acres. That's one of the largest parcels of land, open land, of a city of our size anywhere in the United States. We're proud of that. We made a commitment to do that, and we're going to sustain that. So I don't think the annexing, and I think he said that appropriately at the end, given that might not occur, then, okay, we'd like to see as much preservation of the Colony Orchard or farm as we could. Well, look, our track record on these kinds of things is very, very good. And I would just say point to the Business Technology Research Park to look at that. When you look at those pictures, and we have pictures of what that was before and what it is today, I think that even the harshest of critics would have to say, wow, those guys did a pretty darn good job. I have no reason to believe that we'll do anything less than that as we move forward.
Some county commissioners raised some concerns about tax capturing and those sort of things. Are these details that are going to be tough to work out in order to move forward, or do you just see this as part of the process to ultimately some sort of expansion?
Sure. Well, first of all, we're very early in this conversation, but we've been able to successfully work through those kinds of things in the past. I know right now that the Business Technology Research Park, I believe that our return on the tax base there has been over $7 million in the history of that. Those are real dollars that have helped in a lot of ways for the betterment of the community and the people and the needs that we have here. And we have a large number of employees. I think the last count was 700 people that are actually employed there. So, it's a balance. But I think our university and the awards that we've won and the recognition we've received, we've been really good stewards. And I'm quite confident that during my presidency and for those who follow me, I don't think that's going away. I think that's who we are. That's part of our DNA.
Emily?
Is there a plan B if the county does not agree to the request, the tax capture request put forth by the university and Oshtemo Township?
Oh, there's always a plan B. What it is right now, I don't know. And I don't know what C, D, and E might be. But again, we're enormously resilient. We have a lot of bright people that work on these things. I'm not going to perseverate on what the alternatives are. I think it's been very clear from the beginning for many years what we've said we were going to do, and I think we're on course. We'll do it responsibly and in a thoughtful way.
There are firms right now that are waiting for the opportunity to get into the Business Technology Research Park one way or another.
Well, look, the latest addition there is the new Rubbermaid and bringing all of their design operations to Kalamazoo, to this community. It's not only about jobs, it's about talented people that we are able to retain and sustain here. This is a marvelous place to live. People want opportunities here. We have graduate students and others that, they're looking for opportunities, and it's primarily in Newell Rubbermaid. It's with design, computer science, information technology, and a little bit of engineering. And the number of interns that we have there, there's a win-win in this for a lot of good reasons.
Emily?
Do you have any idea, realistically, how many businesses could locate in the Colony Farm Orchard property?
No, I don't. Yeah. No, I think that we're not trying to get ahead of the plan, ahead of the curve. We're trying to be thoughtful to work through this to begin and engage in our planning process.
The Board of Trustees recently approved some changes to your contract, which got a lot of tongues wagging around Kalamazoo because there's some very particular language in there about your role as president emeritus should you decide to retire. It seemed like rather fine language in there to put into a contract. Should we read anything into that your retirement is coming relatively soon?
First of all, this university, like all reasonably thoughtful universities, and I think we have a great board of trustees, is always talking about succession planning. I mean, we have a succession plan for not only the president, we have it through critical offices we have in the university. So something could happen to an individual at any given time. So you've got to have a backup and maybe even a second backup. So obviously, a president at some point retires. We all know that we're going to die, right? The predictability of the latter is not always, we don't have very good control of that. But I have a very good relationship with the trustees, and certainly my thought there is to make sure that they have ample time to make good, thoughtful processes that they put in place, that you engage in a search at some point and you do that. But that's not imminent.
And this is an interesting topic right now because Eastern Michigan University's president has just announced that she plans to step down in July. And I went back and looked this up when President Henneke retired the first time as president, not as interim president. He announced his retirement in June of 1997, effective July 31st, 1998. So he gave the board over a year. Assuming your health is good and that you kind of pick a retirement date, how much time do you think the board should have to start looking for the next president?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I did see President Morton's announcement yesterday. That caught me a little bit by surprise, the president at Eastern Michigan right. University. I think what Dieter did is very thoughtful. You want to provide ample time to make sure that you have a good, thorough search, and that in addition to that, it allows in the university community, faculty, staff, students, and others, and the community to weigh in on who will be the next president. The challenge to it is if you announce it too early, it can be viewed as, well, we're now in a early retirement mode. I don't ever intend to be in an early retirement mode. You know, my thoughts will be just like I was at SIU Carbondale. When I was the interim chancellor there, I worked the last day of the contract, got in the car the next day and drove to Kalamazoo. So, you know, that's just the way I'm wired and put together. And I'm pleased. I just was with my cardiologist the other day and thought I looked pretty good. So, you know, I was pleased to hear that as well.
Emily?
Have you decided on a proposal for tuition for 2015-2016?
Well, we're waiting for, you know, the governor in his budget recommended that cap of 2.8% on tuition for all of the public universities. In my testimony, I tried to remind our legislators that, you know, 2.8% is vastly different if your tuition is the highest tuition versus one of the lower tuitions. So 2.8%, for instance, at the highest institution in the state of Michigan generates like $415 per student. But for us, it's like $312. There's a $100 swing there. So really, for having kept your tuition lower, you really are being disadvantaged. The logic of this is not, it's just not appropriate. So I think the legislators are looking at that, but we're also all keeping our eye on what's going to happen on road tax. What impact will that have on the budget? So we don't have definitives yet with respect to where the budget is, as indicated by the state. I think our adjustment's like 1.8% in terms of state funds, which still puts us well, well below where we were at our high mark. So the answer to your question is no. Will we be closer at the April meeting? Yeah, we're hoping that we'll be closer in terms of getting there, but we've got a little work to do. And there's some unknowns, uncertainty.
Do you have a suggestion for a better formula for a cap on tuition? Because obviously the state has an interest in seeing tuition not go up too much.
Right.
You know, your point is if you just put it at 2.8%, that's kind of a flat rate. Is there a better way of doing it?
If we were to go to the highest and we were say, well, how would that apply? Okay, that dollar amount, how would that apply? It would put us instead at 2.8, closer to 4%. So it's not a substantive swing, but that would generate somewhere in the order of an additional $2.3 million in terms of the bottom line for the university budget.
There are some university presidents in Indiana who are expressing concern about the religious freedom law, which has recently taken effect and created quite a controversy in that state. There are a couple of similar proposals in Michigan. It's not clear if they would go as far as the Indiana law does. But if something like that were to pass in this state, how concerning would that be to you as a university president?
Yeah, let me go to Indiana. I've already weighed in on this in terms of Indiana. And the way that I've weighed in on it, I'm the president of the Mid-American Conference President's Council. And so I'm asked to do that. And so on Sunday, my communication with the commissioner of the Mid-American Conference, John Steinbrecher, was, look, we have, among other things, an annual meeting in Indiana as one of our President's Council's annual meetings. I think we need to look at this very carefully. We need to make a statement. We need to take a position. And the Mid-American Conference has. So we're not going to go to Indiana. Okay, we feel strongly about this, that there is a basic need here to recognize the humanity in every person. And that this, to me, really starts to look at the issue of being appropriate and fair with everyone. And I think society as a whole is there. I'm surprised what Indiana did. I hope that Michigan does not do that. I think it has negative consequences in terms of the image of the state, the business climate in the state, and more importantly that, just who we are as a people. And so, you know, I don't know that I can add any more than to, I think that's pretty clear where I am on this matter.
Western Michigan University now has reverse transfer agreements with all of the community colleges in the state. I'm wondering if you're seeing a need out there. Bridge had an interesting article not too long ago about students having trouble making the transfer from community colleges to universities and making sure their credits go through. Is Western trying to ensure that its doors are open a little wider than everybody else's?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. We do have reverse transfer degree agreements. Essentially what that means is that if a student leaves a community college and he or she does not have the Associate of Art or Associate of Science degree, but once they transfer to Western Michigan University and take courses, we inform that community college of the courses that the student has taken. And it's then if the community college wants to acknowledge and to award the student the Associate of Art, Associate of Science, they may do so. So it's really their decision. That's good for the community, by the way, that that student lives, because now it says that that community has a higher educated population, and it raises the profile and the metrics that communities are judged on. For us, the idea that we're after is clearly it's about the student. And it's about honoring the student and the family and making sure that if a student chooses a community college route, that we honor that, we respect that, and we do everything in our power to make sure the transition of that student to Western Michigan University is as seamless as possible. So these old stories, and I think there were some aspects of the Bridge article that sort of reflected an earlier time, that this message that, well, these credits don't count, and there may be still some of that going on, but I think that many universities, and certainly this one, has come to the conclusion a long time ago, we need to keep our eye on the student. It's not about the institutions. It's about the student responding to his or her needs, and that's the message, and that's the philosophy.
Let me note that you have very consistently said that, sitting in the very chair you're in now and lots of other places, that it should be about the student first and the institutions somewhere after that. But I'm also wondering if there is some enlightened self-interest here on the part of the university, that there probably are more students now who are thinking about community college as a way to cut some costs along the way to a degree, and that it is beneficial as well that the university is welcoming and can work with those students to ultimately get them to a degree in some way. And if they're spending some of that time at Western, that's great.
Yeah, I think there is self-interest, but I would say it's self-interest in the sense that I'm absolutely confident each and every day I go to work that students on this campus are going to get the very best and that we're going to do everything we can to help them be successful. So I don't think that the self-interest of the university is in contrast to the interest of the student or the family. Our mission is to help students be successful. And we really roll up our sleeves on this campus. We're a value-added campus. There's a lot of campuses that want to be elite and exclusive. We, by design, are inclusive. And yet the profile of our students is outstanding. And the things that they go on to do and the awards that they win, we can compete with anybody, anywhere, anytime. And so, yeah, the self-interest is we know we do it well here, and we want to have the opportunity to demonstrate that every day to every student.
Western Michigan University President John Dunn, as always, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Emily and Gordon. Thank you very much for your time and your listeners.
And thanks to Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Emily Monticelli.
Thanks for having me.